This is Catwoman. I'm typing hard, but in the meantime, enjoy the Sirens of Audio!
Ow.
One day, you will subscribe. Yes, you will subscribe. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just click the notification bell and write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. G'day, audiophiles. This is the Sirens of Audio, the show that explores the universe of Doctor Who and the audio medium. I'm Dwayne.
And I'm Philip. G'day, Dwayne. G'day, audiophiles.
I saw a touch of an eye roll there when you were trying to match that energy.
Oh, I know. Money, I'm just looking at you thinking, I can't believe how brown you are.
I've never seen you so brown. Yeah, I'm out in the sun every day. And yeah, I don't think I can burn anymore. I think that's not possible. I've been out in the sun too much now. So, yeah. Be out too much longer, I'll start to wrinkle up, I reckon.
Yeah, I hope you got a bit of skincare with you because, you will just dry up like a shriveled prune.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's all fun, though. All fun. Won't be long, though. I'll be back in Tasmania and going, I'll be bleached again. Yeah, that's right. All right, today is a great show we've got lined up for you. We've got some new interview material with the lovely Sophie Aldred that we had the opportunity to speak to recently. So we're going to be speaking with her about what she's been doing with Big Finish and particularly with the Torchwood range, with the trilogy of Torchwood stories that she's done so far with Paul Clayton as Mr. Colchester. So that should be very exciting to share that with you. And we'll talk a little bit about the stories too and give you some of our thoughts on that. Have you enjoyed re-listening to these stories, Philip?
I have very much. So well, I enjoyed them once they came out. Yeah, a new one. I enjoyed them once they came out, but actually going back now and listening again after a while and listening to all three in a row, I've really enjoyed going back. And I love the dynamic. It's a fascinating dynamic, which the last episode that has actually thrown out a bit more because I was sort of getting used to it after the first two, but they keep mixing it up. So we'll talk about that as we go, no doubt.
We will. But before we do, do you know what, Philip?
No, what, Dwayne?
We have to jump down the rabbit hole. Will you come with me? Let's go.
Okay, bye. Hello.
We are down the rabbit hole. Thanks for joining me, Philip. I want to talk about the Torchwood range with Big Finish in this rabbit hole topic. I want to get your thoughts on how this is so successful because most of the Torchwood releases don't feature the lead cast from the television series. Because obviously when you think of the TV series, you think of Captain Jack, you think of Gwen Cooper. Those two characters in particular feature very, very infrequently. In fact, Captain Jack hasn't featured for a long time.
Probably shan't ever again.
Yeah, and Gwen, I don't think it's been a long time since I've heard anything from Eve Miles in the Torchwood range. So what is it about the audio series? Because every time I listen to a Torchwood story, I enjoy it. It's something different, unique. They manage to do continually interesting things. Like the story that we're going to talk about today that features Sophie Aldred is number 80 in the Torchwood range. So it's been going for a good number of releases now. What is it about this range that makes it so successful and so listenable?
Well, I think what is true for any story, which is it's a script. These are just such well-written plays and well thought out. you know that my favorite ranges have often been the Companion Chronicles and those little monthly things that come out, because the writers have to be so creative. Torture is the same. We're going to have the first play only has three casts, the two main casts are one others. The second play only has four casts. I think the fourth play has five. It is tiny casts doing a lot of work, but it's all about the script. And because they're so well written, I mean, the three of these are all James Goss, and I think James Goss is one of the best writers Big Finish have. He is so
diverse in his styles.
And especially Torchwood, he's just amazing what he produces. But all the writing is just so well done. And even when they've brought people in, because, I mean, they've all got script editors too, so I think the script editors really help shape the tone, because they do all manage to capture. Well, it's part of the tone for Torchwood can actually shift quite a bit. And so there's a lot more flexibility with tone, but it always feels like Torchwood. It does always feel adult. But I think the writing and the characters just capture you. And so, yeah, you're right. It's often bizarre characters. I mean, the two in the plays today we're going to listen to, neither of them were in Torchwood, the TV series. Sophie Arnold never appeared in Torchwood. And, you know, St. John Colchester, he was brought in into some box sets, which, to be honest, I don't like the box sets. Sorry. I'm not a big fan of the Aliens Among Us box sets. But I think these are amazing and capture a lot more. So, yeah, he was brought in for a different range, which I did listen to, and I thought he was a good character. But the way they're using him now across in Torchwood, the monthly range, really works. So great characterizations, fascinating stories, lovely twists. And then, as always, it's got Big Finish's just classic way of doing great music, great sound design, and you just get sucked in. What about you? What is it about you? What do you find about them?
Well, I must say I like the character of Colchester, even in the series of the Among Us series that I didn't like so much. I always liked his character throughout those, and he's got a great voice. He's great to listen to. No doubt we'll talk more about that as we talk about the specific stories. But it amazes me how many new characters Big Finish have created for the Torchwood range. You've got Torchwood Soho. You've got the Louise Jameson one with the 1970s series Torchwood. You've got Captain Jack, I think there was some setback in the 1800s with him at one stage.
You've got Queen Victoria.
Yep. So that the Queen Victoria ones in actual fact are awesome.
They are great. There's a Charlie's Angels one too. There's with three people who'd never been anywhere else, but that one is one of the funniest and best ones when they're doing the Charlie's Angels ripoff.
And of course, you've got Torchwood One, so with Yvonne Hartman and Yanto before he came to Torchwood Three. So they've expanded all that too. So what would you say to someone?
When they bring Susie Costello back too, who was just in she was in two episodes of the original series, but Indira Varma. I mean, when they bring her back, Susie is such a fascinating character, and they've done some amazing shows with her as well. So what were you going to say?
What would you say to someone who is a fan of the TV series but is hesitant because most of the series doesn't feature Captain Jack? Even when he was in the good books, he wasn't in most of the stories, I would venture to say.
I guess the fact that there's now more than 80 episodes, I mean, I don't know how many years that is, 12 a year. It's been running a lot of years. I think you could actually say to people, it wouldn't still be running this long if it wasn't good. And so, I mean, there'd be a heap that I could recommend to people. But depending on who their favorite character is, is it Susie? Is it Yanto? Is it Tosh? There's those to choose from, but there's enough
Reese.
Reese. But yeah, you've got a lovely Freema episode in there as well, which I still think is brilliant. And you've got Andy as well. We had him on the show. So there's lots of choices to choose from, and the tone will change depending on who you have. If you have PC Andy, it's going to be usually a lot more lighthearted for most of it, a bit more comic. I guess you say to people, well, what do you want? And you know,
is that what makes this series accessible? Is it because they're all so self-contained, all the stories, so you can pick and choose whatever you like?
Yeah, I think you really can. You've got a smorgasbord to choose from, and as much as there's great value with listening in order, these are often the ones I don't get to each month, and so I'll often have a binge of 3 or 4 every couple of months. It doesn't matter what order they're in. There's no through line particularly. I mean, I guess the Queen Victoria ones, they kind of are, but not really. And even these three, which are, they're not a trilogy. They're three stories with Ace and Colchester. It does build on their relationships, but you don't need to listen to them in any particular order. It doesn't really matter. Maybe the first one, Redlist, is, you know, because the first time they meet. But after that, it doesn't matter. You can dip in wherever you want. And I think that accessibility makes it much easier for someone coming into Big Finish and being horrified by how much is there.
Yeah, there's no real arc that I can think of throughout the range. Like, there's different themes. Like, there was a period where the sets were featuring classic Doctor Who monsters throughout as well, but they weren't arc heavy, so you didn't have to. Once again, you could pick and choose whichever one you liked. I think the only ones that are arc heavy are the box sets, like the Among Us sets. So
yeah, the box sets are very arc heavy, and in fact, that's probably why part of the reason I didn't really take them as much. I should go back and give them another try, but at the time, I just they're doing a few adult only things. As much as Colchester was a character I really liked, they introduced some other characters who I wasn't as fond of and didn't quite get. But yeah, so the box sets just didn't interest me, but they're really, that's all arc, and every episode builds, and
yeah,
I'm getting old, and sometimes those arcs are just too much for me to work out what's going on, and I really need to go back. When the next box set comes back, I need to sort of go, you know, it's been 3 months, I need to go back and listen to the first one again, because I've forgotten everything's happened there, to know what's going on in the second box set. So I probably actually found it, if I went back now and listened to them all in one hit, I'd love them, because I'm sure they'd build really well each other, but it's a struggle. And when you're old like me, if it gets too timey-wimey and too arc-heavy, if I'm not listening every week, it just goes a bit. And because they don't do flashbacks, for good reason, because of costs, I get confused. With these, I can dip into and I'm happy. I get my 50 minutes of joy.
That's it. So as far as the Torchwood monthly range goes, you and I, I'm sure, can both wholeheartedly recommend anyone check these out if they haven't done so already. There is lots to choose from, lots of great stuff to sink your ears into. So there you go. I think we should jump out of the rabbit hole now.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll talk about the first story. We'll talk about them in order of release, eh? The three Torchwood stories we're going to talk about tonight. The first one is called The Red List by James Goss. And I'll read a blurb. At first it was lights in the sky, then the country started falling apart. Torchwood has come to help. So has a charitable earth. But there's a problem. Mr. Colchester and Miss McShane find themselves trapped in a quarantine hotel in the middle of an alien invasion. Can they save the world without leaving their rooms?
Trapped in this moderately priced hotel room, while your country's being invaded by aliens. Give me strength.
From Big Finish Productions.
Torchwood, The Red List.
Strange lights in the sky, then weeks later the country being overrun with disasters and protests.
A good summary, Miss McShane.
Thank you, Mr. Colchester.
Help me! Please help me!
You, what are you doing out of your room?
There's someone in this room, 576. They're in pain.
That room is empty.
But I heard them. Did you see that?
See what?
The man fell from the balcony opposite.
Don't come in! Stay back! Stay out there! You heard of UNIT?
That load of over-armored numbskulls.
Yes. Why? Who are you with?
Oh, you wouldn't have heard of us.
Well, so long as you're not Torchwood.
So, funny story.
Big Finish. We love stories.
I don't automatically like military types.
Because you've never fought.
Mate, I fought Daleks.
What?
The facts and the trivia. Torchwood, The Red List by James Goss. This is story number 56 in the Torchwood monthly range, starring Sophie Aldred as Ace, Paul Clayton as St. John Colchester, and Manuel Pacific as Xavier. It was recorded on the 8th and the 26th of July 2021 in lockdown and released in November 2021. It's directed by Scott Hancock, music by Blair Marrott, sound design by Steve Foxen, producers James Goss, the script editor was Scott Hancock, and cover art by Sean Longmore. This is Sophie Aldred's first crossover into Torchwood, borrowing heavily from her book At Childhood's End, which is a 13th Doctor story released in February 2020. Ace has founded the charitable Earth. This was first mentioned in the Russell T. Davis script Death of the Doctor in the 2010 episode of the Sarah Jane Smith Adventures. It was next mentioned in the Class story in Remembrance by Big Finish, and then expanded in Sophie's book. St. John Colchester was first introduced to Torchwood world in the 5th series of Torchwood Aliens Among Us in 2017. The story is set during lockdown, which is appropriate because they're in lockdown, but not for the reason you think. This is the first and only story to feature Manuel Pacific. Manuel is well known in the West End, particularly musical theatre, and is part Italian and he's from Colombia. And that's the facts and the trivia.
So you mentioned it there briefly in the facts and trivia, Philip, but we should probably say from the outset that this is a little different with Sophie Aldred as Ace or Dorothy McShane being in the Torchwood, because she's not actually in Torchwood. These three stories that we're going to talk about, it's all about a charitable Earth and Torchwood coming together, and not always in a good way. So it sort of makes for interesting drama, bringing these two organisations together. And I've got to say, even though I got the audio book, I think I might have an e-copy of it At Childhood's End, but I never got round to reading it. So can you fill me in on some of the details of that story, if you remember?
Yeah, it's actually a really great story. And to be perfectly honest, I hadn't realised it was a 13th Doctor story, which is amusing, because I just got the audiobook version. And, you know, me, I don't bother to read any blurbs or anything, so I just went into it. And the first quarter, at least, is just the Ace story. It's Ace, a charitable Earth, and stuff happening. And then later on, the 13th Doctor and Yaz and the others turn up, and it does become a bit more combined, and Ace basically becomes like a de facto companion to the others. But it's all about a charitable Earth, and it's about alien invasion. They do go off into space, and TARDIS, and other things happen. But to me, the really important stuff is like the first half, which, as I said, the whole focus is just on Ace and her charitable Earth and the Foundation and what she's doing. So she's using this foundation to get into countries, kill off aliens along the way, but also doing a lot of good. So, yeah, it's quite fascinating. And I say the whole charitable Earth started with just a throwaway line in the Sarah Jane Smith Adventure, when I think Sarah and Joe were just talking about different companions. Sarah happened to mention, oh, yes, yeah, there's Ace. She's running a charitable Earth. And from there, it's just grown into this whole thing. So what's your impression for this story? And maybe I think we'll probably end up talking about this story a bit longer, because there's a lot of setup in this one for the future ones. What's your impression of a charitable Earth and what Dorothy's doing?
It kind of, I guess it ties in a little bit with what you see on the TV episode as well, Power of the Doctor. So she's still sort of involved with that organization there. It's a little bit ambiguous in some ways, but she's just out there trying to help in the best way she can. And particularly in the third story we're going to talk about, Sabotage, she takes it to a whole new level of help, shall we say, in that one. I think it's is it what Ace would have ended up doing? I guess it is now, because Big Finish is canon, of course. So we have to accept it, even if we don't like it.
Is it Charitable Earth mentioned in The Power of the Doctor? Because she's still working more. Right, yes. And it's also in one of the DVD box sets too, isn't it? That's in her suit up in one of the video previews.
That's right.
Yeah, so the tabloid has taken on its own life of its own, and it's really been able to grow up Sophie's character. And so Ace is very much now an adult, living in the adult world, doing adult things and changing the world. So I think it's actually a really clever way. And as I said, there's all these different mediums. You've got, you know, Sarah Jane Smith Adventures, you've got Class, you've got Torchwood, you've got The Power of the Doctor, you've got books, all cementing now Ace into her new characterization of what she's doing on the Earth. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's right. She was in Class. I never heard that story. Did you hear that one?
Yeah, I did.
Was that okay? Yeah,
so it was, well, she was great. I'm not a huge Class fan, but I did deliberately listen to that episode because I knew Sophie was going to be in it. And so Sophie has been, they've been able to just give this entire character a whole new life. And like they were able to do with Sarah Jane Smith and Joe Grant in a way too, it really feels now that you've actually brought Dorothy to a place. And as I said, she's becoming a natural in Torchwood. Not that, as you say, she's in Torchwood, but it's really working well in terms of who she is as a character.
Yeah. And like I said, in these three stories, and starting off here, that Colchester and Ace end up working together, but they're kind of not together, and they never are. So there's always this antagonism slightly between them. There's this mutual respect. Colchester really respects Ace. But there's also this level of antagonism that's always there. And I think Paul Clayton does that really well with his acting. I love his voice. As I said, I've liked him in other things that I've heard him in too. And I like separating. Well, and that's what Torchwood, the monthly series, does a lot. They separate the characters a lot. And because he was in those box sets, he never had the chance to separate from the main Torchwood team. So he's got the chance to do that here and be on his own and have these separate missions on his own away from the main Torchwood team, which is very interesting.
Yeah, because I don't think they brought any other characters from the new characters they created into this range except for Colchester. I think he's the only one that's come across. I mean, Ewan Hartman appears in the box sets and the original characters do, but I'm thinking in terms of there's three new characters off the top of my head created. And he's the only one's made it. I just have to say, as an Australian, I love the name St. John. Spelt St. John. It's just one of those British things. Because, I mean, if you asked me how you spell St. John, I'd have no idea. But I wouldn't think you'd spell it St. John.
I thought exactly the same. I looked at that and went, yeah, okay. Yeah.
But I do have a friend who actually, you know, has one of their sons, has many middle names, and one of them is St. John, which was the first time I actually... I think I'd heard of the name St. John before, but I'd never seen it written down. I went, oh, that's interesting.
It sounds Indian to me for some reason. I St. John. Don't know why.
St. John.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, maybe it's got something to do with colonial India. Who knows?
If anyone knows the background to the name St. John, stick in the comments. I'd love to know what the history of the name is. But yeah, Colchester, he's just so proper and so correct. And... But he's a lethal force. I mean, I do love the cover. Like I say, all the covers are just amazing. It's just that Sean Longmore did this cover. But I love the fact that he's just got Paul Clayton with the gun. And you've got Ace in his suit. It's just a beautiful, beautiful cover. Well done. And it was, as I said, this is one of the ones done in lockdown. And as I said, it's interesting because they're in lockdown, but they're not in lockdown for COVID reasons. Obviously, they decided that would be too hard to do. But they're in lockdown because of, was it some insect or mosquito, just in terms of being safe. And then, but they explore what lockdown does to people in terms of every day seeming the same and, trying to be occupied. And I mean, I fortunately never had to do any hotel lockdown, but I can imagine it must have been really dreadful for people just being stuck in a hotel room for 10 weeks to 2 weeks. 10 days to 2 weeks, just with nothing to do. It must have been just dreadful.
Absolutely. All right, on that note, let's go to the next story in the three that we're going to talk about today. The next one is Death in Venice, released in September 2022. And I will read the blurb for that. Dorothy McShane once travelled with the Doctor. She misses those days. Sure, she still saves the world, but less by beating up Daleks and catapulting Cybermen, and more through running a massively successful charity. Only, she's on the run for her life, and her charity's in trouble. Someone wants Dorothy dead, and Torchwood are coming to the rescue. Can Mr. Colchester keep her safe on the magical streets of Venice?
Miss McShane.
Mr. Colchester.
Bubbles? From Big Finish Productions. Torchwood. Death in Venice. Where did you get a motorbike?
Doesn't matter.
Oh, we're in Venice. Couldn't you have stolen a gondola?
What? Are we trying to outrun a turtle?
Are you frightened, Miss McShane?
Someone wants you dead, Dorothy McShane.
I've got maybe a day to save a charitable earth.
Torchwood are going to keep you safe.
Come on, you, get up.
Oh, did the room blow up?
The room blew up. We need to get up and get running.
I'm going to lie here.
Masked figures with guns running up the stairs. Move!
I think you've been saving the world for so long, you can't help it. I didn't know you could drive one of these.
Neither did I. Never tried. But always fancied a go on a jet ski.
This is a snowmobile.
That too. Whoa! Oh, that was close.
I don't want to alarm you.
Never gonna happen.
But we're running out of mountain.
I noticed.
What are we gonna do?
Keep calm and blow something up.
Big Finish. For the love of stories.
Torchwood, Death in Venice by James Goss. The facts and the trivia. This is story number 65 in the Torchwood Monthly range. Recorded on the 11th of April 2022 at the Sound House. Released September 2022. Starring Sophie Aldred as Dorothy McShane, Paul Clayton as Mr. Colchester, Jack Forsyth Noble as the assassin, and Sophia Inga as Eleanor. Directed by Stephen Kavuma, music by Blair Marrott, sound design by Toby Hreshek Robinson, script editor Tim Foley, and cover art Sean Longmore. Jack Forsyth Noble is a British-Australian actor, raised bilingually in Spain and studied drama in London. Sophia Inga has most recently been playing the 11th Doctor's companion in the recent Big Finish box sets, starring Jacob Dunman as the 11th Doctor. Director Stephen Kavuma has directed three Torchwood stories in all for Big Finish, and he's a director in London and writer. So I think he's a friend of Scott Hancock, who Scott got along to come along and do some directing for him when he was too busy. And those are the facts and the trivia.
Thank you for that, Philip. So what are your thoughts on this one? Getting these two back together again in a different kind of way.
Well, it's a very different sort of way. Now, we've still got this international flair. I think the thing we didn't mention was the fact that they were in lockdown in a hotel. Most Doctor Who and Torchwood tend to take place around London or Wales or, you know, in the home countries in the UK. All the Torchwoods with Dorothy and Mr. Colchester are all international special things. I forget, where did the Redis take place? Was it supposed to be some African country?
I think it was some fictitious island in the Caribbean, wasn't it?
I wasn't quite sure, but it was certainly a country revolution happening, had a whole international flair to it. This one is Venice and then around bits of Europe. And where the last one was much more of a psychological drama, lots of wordplay, lots of crosswords. That's all stuff that James Goss, he loves playing with language a lot, James Goss. So the last one was very much playing with language and words. This one is a murder mystery, James Bond spy thriller, I guess you'd say. So it's got a totally different feel to it, but some lovely moments. And once again, Mr. Colchester shows he can't really be trusted by the end, even though you do have to trust him for your life. And so once again, yeah, Dorothy's in trouble. The organization's in trouble. There's murder. There's suspicion. There's escape. But it's glamorous. As I say, this is like a James Bond film. You can the lavish locations, the boats, the ships, the trains, the gun battles, the set pieces. This is everything you expect from a James Bond film. And to be perfectly honest, I was captivated the whole time. At one stage, I was listening to in the car, and I actually missed a track, and I was totally lost. Just by losing 8 minutes in one track, so much had happened in that 8 minutes that it had jumped major locations, major things had happened, characters were dead, and so I had to go back and re-listen to it all again because I knew I'd missed so much because the pace of this story is so fast. If you skipped a track in Red List, you may not even know you've done it because you're just setting two hotel rooms next to each other at a balcony. Right. And yeah. it would be very easy to miss a track and not realize you'd missed a chunk of plot, which would be important because it'd be all in the language. But in this one, you miss a track and you've changed location, cast, everything. And so it is just, it doesn't let up from beginning to end in terms of pace. And just, first class air travel to yachts to everything, it does not lay up at all. What do you think, Dwayne? You can tell I enjoyed this one.
Yeah, it was a great one, wasn't it? And I love the sci-fi elements within it. I love how the aliens were trying to get through. That was really interesting. I like that. But I got a sense in this that the hierarchy of A Charitable Earth in comparison to Torchwood is a little bit different because you always seem that UNIT, Torchwood, even Sarah Jane were all on that same level. Whereas here, it seems like A Charitable Earth is like doing their own thing and Torchwood's overlooking to make sure A Charitable Earth's doing okay, like their guardian angel type thing. So it doesn't seem to be on an equal footing to me as what am I trying to say there? I guess it doesn't seem as maybe as credible as those other organisations. I suppose she's doing something on a more humanitarian level rather than fighting aliens and things like all these others are doing. I guess that's the difference between Charitable Earth and all these other organisations.
Yeah. I mean, Dorothy expressed in the first story that she doesn't trust Torchwood because the organisation was set up to try and deal with her best friend. So she's always got a dislike and a distrust of Torchwood because of what their purpose is. And as much as Colchester saying, well, that's not what we're on about now, she doesn't quite believe that. But it's just that, I mean, I forget if it's in the book or where it is, but it talks about the fact that the Charitable Earth built its offices just down from Tower Bridge because Dorothy wanted to make sure she could overwatch what the UNIT were up to all the time because she didn't trust UNIT because of all their guns. And so you've got this feeling of, Charitable Earth is watching UNIT, Torchwood's watching Charitable Earth, UNIT doesn't trust what Torchwood's doing. So you've got all these organizations that could actually work together. They've all got alien tech. They've all got all this extra knowledge, but they're actually all working against each other. And certainly in terms of Charitable Earth, part of the issue with this whole story is someone's trying to destroy it from both either inside or outside. And so there's espionage, there's lies, there's politics. So this, as I said, this works at so many different levels, which is very different to the other two. And even the third one we'll get to later is very different again. So you've got two characters who you like. You trust Dorothy implicitly. You know that she can be trusted. Though actually, that gets a bit doubtful in the third one. Colchester, you're never quite sure where you're standing with him, but you want to trust him. And I think James writes him so well that you actually are always fond of him, but he's not always going to be doing the right thing. And that ambiguity really helps drive the stories and drive their engagement. So as a listener, you're always really engaged with these characters.
I guess the difference between pure Doctor Who characters and Torchwood characters is the Torchwood characters, you can trust them because you know they're going to win, they're going to find a way to win, but they don't always have to stick to such a moral pathway. They can do something that's a bit immoral to reach their ends, and they have no qualms about that. Whereas a Doctor Who character is the total opposite. They've got seem to have a higher standard, I think, which is where the Ace character would be. So that's potentially what the difference is between Torchwood characters and Doctor Who characters.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed this one too. Absolutely. Yeah, very nice.
The music is just being so well done. So Blair Mount's done both these so far. He actually has some lovely little themes. He captures some of the Italian feel at points, which is nice. I mean, the previous one, he captured some of the, I don't know what, that feel, the reggae feel. I do like how he's been writing his music, and it's always quite engaging. And once again, the sound design, I can't fault in terms of, and this one in particular has so much sound design going on, so many battles. It's got these, you know, amazing battle scenes. But you can always follow what's going on because the sound design's been so well crafted that you don't need a lot of dialogue to tell you what's going on, because you can actually tell by the sound design, which is always an important mark that you can take out the dialogue and still be engaged and understand the action.
And whenever there's action in Venice, it always takes me back to Tomb Raider 2. I enjoyed playing Tomb Raider 2, which was set in Venice. So I always visualize those things for some reason. I suppose because I spent a lot of hours with Lara Croft in Venice.
Right. Only bit about Lara Croft I know is I've seen one of the movies.
There you go. All right. Shall we go on to the third story?
Let's do it.
All right. So here's the blurb for Torchwood Sabotage. Vultura has started mining some mountains in a state in India. The local villagers are displaced into a resettlement camp and are retaliating. Brought in to stop the sabotage is Mr. Colchester, who finds that the camp is overseen by Ace. Who is causing the sabotage? His suspicions are aroused. Ace always was good with explosives.
I'm too old for this, Miss McShane. Please, Sabria, when we're blowing things up, call me Ace.
From Big Finish Productions, Torchwood Sabotage.
Whole villages displaced by the Vultura mining operation. Rivers polluted, people falling sick. This is absolutely where I'm needed. But what are Torchwood doing here?
There have been several acts of sabotage, petty vandalism.
Good.
I'm disappointed in you. The mining operation is absolutely safe, but very delicate. These idiots could cause an environmental catastrophe.
We've been here since the world's first song, and then you came along, told us you owned us, took away our temples. We sent you away. You came back, but now you are big companies that will make us rich. Only no one gets rich, and we no longer have homes. You all come and stand by as our ancient land is ruined.
Are we the bad guys? You, me, Miss McShane. I'm afraid Sabria was right. At some point, everyone finds themselves working on the wrong side. You just have to do the best job possible.
These markings...
About 30,000 years old.
I think the carvings were left by aliens.
What?
Big Finish. For the love of stories.
Let's not fight.
Oh, but we're at our most fun when we do.
The facts of the trivia. Torchwood Sabotage by James Goss, story number 80 in the Torchwood Monthly Range. Recorded on the 31st of July 2023 at the Soundhouse and released February 2024. Starring Sophie Aldred as Ace, Paul Clayton as Mr. Colchester, Tom Hansen as Dyson, Shaheen Khan as Sabria, and Anant Varman as Jamal. This was directed by Lisa Bowerman, music again by Glenn Marrott. Sound design, this time by Tim Steamson. The producer was James Goss. The script editor was Tim Foley. And cover art by Sean Longmore. And this is the first Big Finish production for all the supporting cast in the story, and so far the only one that they've all done. And those are the facts of the trivia.
All right, so this one's very fresh. What did you think of this brand new one, Philip?
Well, it was good, actually. This is what actually inspired me to go back and listen to the other ones again, because it was, once again, quite different. This one's set in India. I think it's India. It's at least...
It is.
Yeah. It's India. Good. I'm just making sure it wasn't... Someone on the subcontinent. Make sure I had the right country. I didn't want to get it wrong. Yeah. Once again, it just felt like a big epic production with another huge cast. I guess the previous one, which only has four cast members... And you're roaming all of, you know, lots of Europe and huge gun battles. This one actually has one more cast member, but it feels a bit more contained because it's basically set within a village. It's a lot more political in terms of corporations against the little person. It would certainly speak a lot more to Sophie Eldred's politics. And so I think, I know that she particularly liked doing this. I can understand why she did in terms of her politics, in terms of, you know, she's very much for the little person and has issues with some of the big corporations coming down and poisoning the water supplies, poisoning the land. So this has a very strong political message. So as much as we've had previous ones of the stories there, the first one was political in terms of a corrupt government official leader who maybe should be assassinated. So there was a lot of politics in the first one in terms of they were in a situation of civil war, explosions, people uprising, and a corrupt leader. The death in Venice was, as I said, more of just a general James Bond runaround, but there was still politics in it in terms of the corporation. This one really goes all out on the politics, because you've got the evil of capitalism and what happens when you put a capitalist group into a third world country and have no bounds, no control of it, and how might that corporation try and change the law, change the scenario to give them more power, more access to money, and what are the consequences of capitalism run wild. So this is very much making a strong political point, as well as though, but that being said, it is also a good story because there is the whole idea of the moral dimension of, well, is it okay for the little person to sabotage, to do damage to the corporation in order to try and regain freedoms? So, yeah, it's an interesting message. We could probably talk for a while, but there'd be lots of spoilers if we did that, talking through the whole moral components. But it actually has a strong moral element that would be fun to discuss and talk about, because there is that whole element of the corporation, the big business, versus the little person, and how do you protect the environment. So I said, a lot of this is very much after Sophie's own heart, so I'm sure she really enjoyed it. What was your initial impressions, Dwayne?
Yeah, Sophie did say that in the extras, didn't she, this was right up her alley. So you could see her getting right into it. Once again, it was. I don't think we mentioned how the last one, it was Death in Venice that started with them both meeting each other on the plane, didn't it?
So yeah. She's flying economy, he's flying first class.
Yeah.
And then brings her up to first class, and then unfortunately she gets photographed, and that just all leads to bad press.
So that started off with, you know, her doing her thing, him doing his thing, coming in and looking over what she was doing. And the same thing was happening here. So Colchester was coming in from Torchwood, sort of the big brother of A Charitable Earth, coming in and watching over her, which is interesting because he had information that he knew in both of those stories, but particularly this story, Sabotage, that he didn't let her know about till right at the end. And therefore, we, as the listener, didn't know a lot about till right at the end either. So, but I don't think that was. I think that sort of overarching story was just a subplot compared to what you've already said, which was examining the political side of things. They're still not best buddies, Ace and Colchester, but they have kind of a. They have a mutual respect, but it's very guarded, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting the point you just made in terms of he has information she doesn't know, and that was very much the case in the previous story. But in the first one, it was she had all the information that he didn't know. Yeah. And so there is actually, they do play with that sort of idea quite a bit. And the fact that it gets swapped around actually is probably, in some ways the Red List, he's more the primary character, I think, but then in the second one,
I mean, it is Torchwood, isn't it? So
it is, but it's very much the next two. Ace has a much bigger place to play. In fact, I think it's probably the second one's actually probably fairly evenly both of them. But this one is, I think, probably Ace has a stronger role to play, even though there's a lot of manipulation happening from Colchester in the background. But you don't see the manipulation happening all the time.
I think it's interesting. There was one scene where she was making some Nitro 9, which I thought was interesting, or helping someone to make some Nitro 9, you know, put this, put
seven
this
grand,
amount of this and this
grains,
amount of that.
7 grains only.
Yeah, don't put 9 or something like
only
that.
Only 7.
That was really cool. I wanted to get your take, because we've had three different directors, but he said the second director was a friend of Scott Hancock, so they may have had a similar style. What did you think of this one with Lisa Bauman coming in? Because I certainly noticed some differences here.
Yep, go and tell me what you noticed.
It was a lot more focused on the dialogue and the relationships between the people, and I think that's what our female directors bring to the table a lot of the time. Is and I really enjoy that in audio. That is my cup of tea when it comes to listening to audio. I like that close personal relationships with intense dialogue. I mean, you said that it is a large scale story, but with Lisa Bauman in particular, she's able to bring it right down into a small scale as well as having that big scale story going in the background.
Yeah. I mean, this is much more character driven piece. This is really about three characters, three main characters. Then you've got a villain character who's pretty hideous, actually. And then you've got someone who's naive, who doesn't make it through the whole show. But this is much more a character piece. And so you've got different perspectives. So each character plays a different role. So you've got the village perspective by one of the characters is she actually the mayor? But someone important in the village. She's the mayor. And so you actually get the understanding of what the village life is like and what it's like for them. You've got the other character who works for the company, and he's giving you the company perspective, though once again, that's not being done in a particularly pleasant way. You've got Colchester, who is ostensibly working for the company, and so he has a role to play to protect the company. And then you've got Ace with her own agenda in terms of trying to care for the environment and for the village. And so because of the interplay with those four characters, it's really so character-driven and about who they are, their motivations. And so bringing Lisa Bauman in, it was the perfect director who's going to play up in those character pieces so well. Death in Venice, amazing romp through the countryside, gun battles, set pieces, shoot them all up. And so actually bringing a stage director, male, he nails all that. But in terms of a different character piece, actually bringing in Lisa Bauman, who's just so good at character pieces, it was just the right thing to do, and she just nails it.
Yeah, I agree. Totally.
Yeah, I think I mentioned the fact that all the covers have all been done by
Sean Longmore.
Yep, Sean Longmore, and they've all got very similar themes. So you've always got Ace in front with Colchester behind. You've always got Colchester holding a gun of some sort in all three covers. The other background is all just to give you an idea of the location settings. So this has the refinery, it has the dam, it has the explosions happening. So as I said, you can get a lot of the character piece out of the covers, but of course you've got the older Ace. It's fun seeing Ace in her jacket with the Nitro 9
here's something I wanted to mention about that. You know how sometimes people who come in to Big Finish and haven't heard the Doctors as they are getting older find it a bit jarring to hear one of the classic Doctors with the old voice? They find it hard to suspend their disbelief at that. In this, for me, it's a little bit the opposite. Because Sophie's voice has not changed one bit since 1987, when she was in Dragonfire, and she is older now. Sometimes I find that hard in my head because the voice sounds so exactly the same, even though we know her, we've met her, she is the same, and she is older. It just doesn't seem that way to me. So I find that a little bit funny at times when I'm listening.
I do think her voice has dropped a bit. I think it is a bit lower, but she's still a young woman, for goodness sake. I think, yeah. I'm sure her voice will age.
Just like we're young men, Philip.
Just like we're young men. Well, yeah. It's been, I saw today, it's 20 years today since the announcement of Christopher Eccleston as the new Doctor. Yeah. I think 20 years, how is that possible? I was such a young man in my, you know, in my early 30s. And just going, good grief, like, I couldn't believe that we'd still be here now with new Doctor Who coming out, about to start again in May. Oh, how are the years passing so fast? Makes no sense.
Beats me. All right, did you have anything final to say about Sabotage before we move on?
No, just all these three stories are really great. And if you love Ace and you love Sophie Aldred, and if you've ever met her, you could not but do that. Really worth getting.
Absolutely. Wholeheartedly agree with you. All right, on that note, let's move straight on to, because we've already played the trailers, but we will move straight into our chat, our recent chat, with the lovely Sophie Aldred.
Tales of the TARDIS. It was so exciting to see you.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? How did that come about?
Well, that was funny, actually, because in the summer I was up in Edinburgh and I was on a seminar thing for this, you know, this landmark thing I do, Landmark Forum, which is all about, you know, sort of getting the most out of your life and transforming, transforming who you are in the world. And I just, something that somebody said just had me go, hang on a minute, I'm not taking any risks at the moment with, you know, and I've been in the back of my mind thinking, I really should ask Russell, but you don't ask Russell for a job, you know, you can't do that. And in the end, I just heard myself and I thought, oh, for goodness sake. So I messaged him and I said, can we have a FaceTime? And he said, yes, how about tomorrow? So we had a lovely FaceTime. And I said, look, how likely is it that Ace will reappear, you know, in the future? And he said, oh, well, not sure, you know, da, 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 but it's going to be a couple of years at least. And, you know, and then wouldn't it be great to have this, you know, everybody involved, say, wouldn't it be great to have Wendy Padbury? And I was thinking, yeah, sod Wendy. What about Ace, you know? And and then I thought, well, now I know, you know, that's good. I can get on with my life. Anyway, literally like 4 days later, my agent said, oh, you've had an availability check for this, for a thing for Doctor Who. And it was like, what? And then Tales of the TARDIS came along and I got sent the script. I thought, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And Russell had said that he, you know, as part of the 60th, what he really wanted to do was to get all of the content as a special gift for the fans onto iPlayer. And so I texted him. I said, what's all this about? He said, I couldn't tell you. I'm so sorry. I was biting my lip. I wanted to say something, but I couldn't possibly say because they hadn't got the funding quite in place to do it. Anyway, so then I got sent this script and it was all happened very, very quickly. And it was Pete McTighe,
Was this happening after you got back from Australia, or was it, you know, but
oh yeah, yeah, no, this was beginning of September.
Okay.
Yeah, last year. Oh no, it was way after I got back from Australia. It was I think he thought of it somewhere near the beginning of August. It all moved incredibly quickly. And then wonderful Scott Hancock, who's directed me so much in Big Finish and produced me so much, who's such a lovely, lovely man. He produced his first production job. Telly job was doing Tales of the TARDIS, and a very good job he did too. And it was wonderful. And we went down the night before. Sylvie and I met up to go through our lines in the lovely hotel room. I had a costume test, and I took my costume from the final scene that I shot, the companions assemble scene of Power of the Doctor, because I thought it only got into one shot. I'd love to get a bit more wear out of it on screen. And I went down there, and funnily enough, the suit that the woman had ordered me hadn't come. So she said, oh, thank goodness. So I tried it on. She bought me some new Doc Martens, which I was very pleased about. And she said, hey, do you want some badges? I noticed you have badges on your costume. And I'd not thought about that at all. So I said, yes, I'll have those badges. So we put them on the lapel. And then I went to makeup and they trimmed my hair. And then it was great because I'd been just about to have my hair cut short. And I said, will you check with Scott? Because he might want it long. She said, oh, no, I'm sure it'll be all right. And I said, well, just check with him. And he said, no, can we have it long, keep it long? So they said, oh, well, never mind, because after you finish the day's work, we can cut your hair for you. So I thought, hey, great, good, a BBC haircut, a taxpayer's haircut I've got. anyway, so then we, I saw Colin and Nicola doing theirs because we were doing it all in 1 week. And actually, just the weekend before that, we were all at Regeneration's convention in Swansea in Wales, and nobody was talking about it at all. And everybody was being very quiet. And then at lunchtime, I noticed that everybody sitting around the table were all people who were going to be in these Tales of the TARDIS things. So I leant forward and I said, right, who's learnt their lines? And it was Peter and Janet and Wendy and Fraser and Colin and me. And I think Sylve was there as well. And we all just started talking about it. And it was so funny because we all had this massive secret that we had to keep. Anyway, it was so good doing it. It was great, great, great fun. And the memory TARDIS set was just beautiful. The attention to detail, I cannot tell you. It was just, I mean, I was spotting things all day, like, that didn't even get into shot. You know, I spotted Bill Potts's student union card at one point, was just lent up on something. And the this board with all the TARDIS keys on it. It was a fan's heaven. It was an Aladdin's cave for Doctor Who fans. And then even the chess board, you know, the Sylve said, oh, well, you know, what did I do? What? And the I think it was the first AD came on and said, well, you do this, and then you do that. And then you were facing that. I mean, it was just amazing. They knew their stuff so well. There was the other bit where I'm talking about my grandmother and my nan, and they said, we're going to emulate the shot from Ghostlight where the doctor's behind you and the camera comes around, and you know, they showed us the shot, you know. I mean, it was just so brilliant. It was so for the fans. It was just wonderful to do it. And then at the end, Sylvester said, because it says they go wild in the TARDIS, you know, he said, can I do the spoons? So they went off and got him some spoons. It was like, oh, wow, he's got to play the spoons. So that's how that came about.
Now, do you know that's still a standing set? They've kept the set standing?
Yes, I believe they have. So hopefully, you know, there may be more. Who knows?
There was a lot of surprises at 60th for the fans to have all those teams reunited.
Wasn't it great? It was such a surprise. And then all the stuff around the 60th, you know, then the fact that we were all invited to see the showing of the Star Beast as well, all us old folks, you know, it was really lovely to be together, you know, old and new. I really felt that the fans were well served. And it was funny because we were all complaining, weren't we? We were all going, they haven't announced anything. They haven't got a convention. What are they doing? They haven't. But I mean, you couldn't move for Doctor Who content. It was just great. All the radio stuff. I don't know whether, did you get access to that in Australia?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, it was just brilliant. I thought, you know, all the interviews, the archive, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
You know, that. That was incredible as well. Yeah, really good.
Now, in terms of working, you're doing a lot of audiobooks at the moment and audio readings. What are you doing a lot of?
I am. I'm absolutely stuffed at the moment with audiobooks. I was trying to record about three of them concurrently last week. Yeah, I've got one to finish off today, and then I've got this other one to, you know, audition for, as it were. And then I did this Henry House last week. I went up and did a cameo in that. And then,
do you just want to say what Henry House is for people who don't know?
Yeah, sure. Henry House is a crowdfunded film project, and it's being made kind of by accident. It's got a load of Doctor Who people in it. And it, the lead role is played by a very talented young Scottish actor who's brand new. Nobody's seen her before. And it's all about, it takes place in a care home called Henry House. And Peter Purvis is one of the leads as well in it. And he jumped at the role because, of course, he hasn't really acted that much since Doctor Who, really. Mm. And he went down the presenter route. And of course, in those days, people used to be very much typecast. And so he ended up as a presenter, being known as a presenter. But of course, he's a fantastic actor. So this is giving him a real, you know, a real platform to show what he can do. It's fantastic. Carol Ann Ford is also in it again, you know, playing a great role. And you might spot Katie Manning and Colin Baker and myself, and all sorts of people are popping up all over the place. So I don't know, they're filming, it was stopped for COVID and then it's been remounted. And then I don't know, obviously it's got to go through the editing process once the filming takes place. So I don't know when it's going to come out, but watch this space, because I think it's going to be very fun for the fans to watch this one.
Yeah, we'll also be talking about it when it comes out, because Peter Purvis has been pushing it a lot and been very excited about the project. Now, in terms of Big Finish, there's not been a lot of stuff being released for you for a while, but the big focus for you actually is Torchwood. So how do you end up becoming a Torchwood character?
Oh, I'm so pleased about that as well. Again, one of those things, you know, call out of the blue, would you like to do a Torchwood? Yes, please, I would. And Paul Clayton and I get on really, really well. He plays this character, Mr. Colchester, who works for Torchwood. And somehow their characters just go really beautifully together. He's kind of very sardonic, and Ace is obviously like not very happy with him, but they do love each other, really. It's just, you know, you can't really tell on the surface. And the stories, James Goss has written so well for us both. Really, really great writing. He just completely gets this kind of slightly sarcastic, the humour, the adventure as well. So I'm thoroughly enjoying doing whatever James has got next up his sleeve for us. This last one we've done that's been Sabotage, which has just been released, is it's an environmental protest story, which is very timely, and is actually based on a real real situation. And then the first one we did was just post-COVID, and again it was based on, you know, kind of came out of that, really. And the middle one, which is the Death in Venice one, is a much more of a sort of James Bondy exciting adventure, which takes place all over. Even in, you know, we get on a ski lift in the Alps as well at one point, a cable car. So yes, they're all very different, and I like that as well. But the relationship with Mr. Clayton and Ace works so beautifully, I think.
Yeah, I've enjoyed all three. I listened to Sabotage today and was really, it's the part of the dialogue. It is such witty dialogue and clever dialogue between the characters. And you and Paul just work so well together. They just bounce off each other. Had you worked with Paul before?
Never. No, I'd never met him before. And we just clicked like that as our characters. We just really clicked. And it's lovely because he's very complimentary about me, and I'm obviously very complimentary about him. It's a sort of love fest, really.
Mm. Yeah, I think his character, I guess, a bit more stuffy, and yours is a bit more adventurous and wild. But the two of you just together really contrast really well with each other.
Yes, it's all down to James Goss's brilliant writing, I have to say.
James is an amazing writer. His concepts are always just brilliant. The other piece you did during COVID was work with David Tennant. What was it like finally getting a story with the Tenth Doctor?
It was wonderful, partly because I got to play two aces. You know, that was really fun, playing young, gung-ho, Nitro 9 chucking ace and the sort of older, slightly more measured head of At Childhood's End, the ace that was created for that, A Charitable Earth ace. So that was great. Unfortunately, we weren't together because it was COVID times. So I had David in my headphones. He was in an attic somewhere, and I was in my airing cupboard at home. It would have been really lovely to get together, but sadly that was not to be. But I'll bump into him again, I'm sure. My son bumped into him actually the other day. My son was having a drink with a friend who's just won Best Newcomer Award in the Offies, actually, the West End Offies. And they were having a drink at the understudy bar, I think, at the National Theatre. And Adam spotted David and went over to him and said, "Hello, I'm Trifu Tom," because, of course, my son was the real live boy at the beginning and the end of each episode of Trifu Tom, the animation that I did with David years ago. So that was nice. And David was very nice to him.
Well, I think David's nice to everyone, isn't he?
He is, absolutely, yeah.
So what else have you got coming up in the future? Anything big that you can tell us about?
I am going off to various Doctor Who events. I'm very excited because I'm going to Texas with Sylvester in April for a week. So that would be great. I've never been to Texas, and we're going to Amarillo, which will be really exciting. I've looked up the attractions. There's a canyon near there I want to go to, and the art gallery, of course. I always have to go to an art gallery wherever I am, as you know. I'm really excited about going with Sylvester and having whatever adventures show up when you're with Mr. McCoy.
From Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, 10th Doctor, Classic Companions.
Once upon a time, that is how stories begin. But have you ever stopped to wonder what that means?
K9! Yes! The whistle still works! Just like riding a bike.
Standby mode deactivating.
Leela, what have you done?
Stopped you making a mistake, Peter Kelly. This is not the one we hunt.
Leela! It's you!
Floor 12. Enjoy your visit to a charitable earth.
Do my best.
Miss McShane, you're back!
That jump was incredible. Heart's still thumping.
Thank you, Doctor.
And that car roll this morning. Oh, good luck.
First she's ever done. One take.
You're the Doctor.
Yes, Nissa.
I remember.
No.
We're out of road.
You've got a new face again. And you're still not Scottish.
Are you sure about that, lassie? I can do Scottish. I'm totally Scottish.
Exos expansion triggered. Actualize.
You need to disconnect that thing.
Thing, inanimate object, distinct from sentient beings.
Don't listen to him, K9.
You have some seriously twisted ideas about filing. Make this thing let me go.
Worlds. Worlds of plenty. Boundless nutrition.
Big Finish, for the love of stories.
Once again, always lovely to hear from Sophie Aldred, and That brings us to almost the end of the podcast, but we're going to talk a little bit about something that we have been listening to recently, each of us. Now, whose turn would it be? Let me check my list. My list says, well, you're not going to believe this, but it says it's your turn, Philip.
It's my turn. Okay, well, it's my turn. Yeah. I'll go first then. I'm going to recommend something that's just come out from Big Finish in the last couple of weeks, and it's the latest Tom Baker set, Storm of the Sea Devils. Storm of the Sea Devils, it's called. There's also got World Beyond, which doesn't get on the title. Never mind, poor guys. So you've got Storm of the Sea Devil, which is a four-part story by David K. Barnes. And it's also got a two-part story by Robert Kahn and Tom Selinski, Worlds Beyond. This is Tom Baker with Harry Sullivan and also Naomi Cross. Now, I can't quite get my head around how this has been working, because Harry Sullivan and Naomi Cross have been traveling with the Seventh Doctor a bit, and we do know that the Seventh Doctor picked them up in our time, and they're also around during the unit stories with the 11, and which is set in our time, current time, even though they'd both come from the past, so we didn't actually quite know how they got there. So
it's very confusing.
They got there through the Fourth Doctor, so the Fourth Doctor obviously drops them and leaves them at the wrong place. This is, I think, if I've got this right, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I think this is the first story in the chronology of Harry Sullivan and Naomi Cross. So even though we've got Seventh Doctor stories that have been coming out for the last 2 years, we've now finally got to them meeting. And as I said, there's actually a whole book, and there's a whole Seventh Doctor set of Naomi Cross and Harry Sullivan I haven't listened to yet. And the first set that came through, I think I only listened to the first episode or two, and I was so confused. I did listen to more, even though I loved them in unit. So I need to go listen to the Seventh Doctor ones, which I haven't done, so I confess that. But this one's where they introduce is fantastic. So Harry's on holiday. He gets picked up by Naomi Cross, the new companion. She just generally works behind a desk. The two of them just click. The Fourth Doctor, they end up on this island with the Fourth Doctor and Sea Devils. The Sea Devils are really well done, not like when they did them with Jodie. These are actually Sea Devils who are make sense and are scary. Tom Baker is in fine form. This was recorded back in 2019, so 5 years ago. So it's been a while. So no one of the Seventh Doctor ones are coming out. But, I mean, that gap's going to get bigger and bigger, because we know that they've got recordings for Tom Baker up to 2030 already in the can. So, you know, this gap between when they were actually recorded and coming out is going to get bigger and bigger with these main range ones. But can I say, this pairing with Tom is just sensational. And so really enjoying it. I mean, you know, Christopher Nail, I've been enjoying his Harry Sullivan before. He's really developing the part now. Eleanor Crookes, who's playing Naomi Cross, is a feisty little character. She's quite modern compared to Harry's, you know, stiff upper lip. Very serious, very... Is he misogynistic? I don't think he is. In fact, they make sure that he's not. But he's certainly old-fashioned in terms of how he treats women. But, yeah, all up, it's a great story. And the Tom Selinski and Robert Kahn two-parter is actually really, really enjoyable as well. And it ended, and I don't quite understand what the ending was, because there's two possibilities. You can take it two different ways. And they do give you the two options at the end, and I haven't decided which of the two options the story was. So I need to go back and listen to the two-parter again to try and work out which one I think they were doing, because I'm not quite sure. It's a lovely little, at the end you go, oh, it could be this or it could be that. And either way is satisfying. And I probably shouldn't try and work out which one I think it is. But anyhow, it's a joyous little piece set in a luxury holiday resort, but things go wrong. So you've got one on Sea Devils in an island, and you've got another one set in a luxury resort. Only six episodes. So, you know, once again, the way that Big Finish has avoided putting up prices for their sets is they're just reducing episode count. What are they called? Shrinkflation? I think Bard had a big go at it. You know, all the chocolate bars are getting slightly smaller, but they still charge the same price.
Killer Pythons.
Killer Pythons? Oh, they're smaller too, aren't they?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
they're like killer worms now.
Yeah, so shrinkflation is definitely now set in with Big Finish. So, you know, whereas when Tom Baker boxes came out, you get 4 one-hour stories. Now we've got a four-parter, a two-parter. It is, I guess, it does link in with the period better in terms of, you know, that era. But even so, yeah, these are two great stories, different lengths, worth listening to. I've raved on too long. Excellent. What about you, Dwayne? What have you been listening to?
Okay, I won't rave on quite as long, but I'm going to recommend some music this time.
Of course you are.
Because I'm currently speaking to you from Exmouth in Western Australia, which is like the gateway to the Ningaloo Reef. So the last few weeks I've been camping down in Ningaloo. I've had quite some interesting adventures down there, quite stressful at times, because it's very difficult to get to. But we got in, we got out, and yeah, so I've been snorkeling with turtles and stingrays and all different kinds of fish and reef sharks, and it's been absolutely incredible. We watched turtles hatching last night, and while I was sitting out, we've been watching turtles a couple of nights hatching, but on both nights I've found myself looking up at the stars, and for some reason a song by Genesis kept coming to mind called Dancing with the Moonlit Night, spelt with a K, yep. Which is the opening track to their fifth album. You have to correct me if I'm wrong, but it's called Selling England by the Pound. And I think it was released around 1974, I think. Yeah, 1973, 74. But anyway, I was listening to that and I just had that in my headphones, and it had been so long since I'd heard it. I just really loved every track on that album. It starts with Dancing with the Moonlit Night. What else we got? Firth of Fifth, that's another famous song off there. So it's the Genesis before Phil Collins. So for people of our vintage, you probably know Genesis more from the 80s when they were doing Invisible Touch and all that kind of thing. But the real Genesis was from the 70s, particularly with Peter Gabriel fronting the band. So that's my recommendation and what I've been listening to. Selling England by the Pound by Genesis. Check it out. It's on Spotify. Just grab it.
Okay. So,
all right. That'll do us for this installment of the Sirens of Audio. Been great to be in your company, Philip.
And good to be in yours, you brown man.
Thank you very much. And we'll catch you all next time.
Bye, everyone.
This has been the Sirens of Audio episode 192, Ace and Mr. Colchester, with our guest Sophie Aldred and your hosts Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Theme music by Joe Kramer. More about us at sirensofaudio.com. Comment below to give us your feedback or contact us via email at sirensofaudio@gmail.com or by using any one of our socials using the handle Audio Sirens. Thanks for listening, audiophiles. We'll hear you next time.